question.
This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
The only way you can end a blood feud is by the spilling of more blood. That is the only way I know to eliminate your Regina problem.
By what, killing her?
Is there no other option?
I'm afraid not.
Stop! Well, listen to yourselves. You're talking about killing my mom. You used to be heroes. What happened to you?
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and I'm so glad to be joining our usual co-hosts again after a week in, or actually 10 days in the Vatican covering some minor event taking place, like a new pope, which unfortunately made it impossible for me to join all of you during the last show. But I'm so glad to be back because, wow, I missed some stuff. I'm talking to Inge, Lisa, David, and Shelley. Welcome to you all. And I think I missed one of the best episodes of the season last week.
You did.
And you guys did great recording without me. Actually, I should be I should take myself out of the recording altogether because you guys do fantastic.
No, we missed you.
Well, I missed you guys too. And unfortunately, haven't listened to the entire podcast episode yet. So I might repeat stuff that has already been discussed last week. And to complicate the matters, I've watched both of the episodes just, you know, 2 hours before getting online and doing this one. So I might actually get confused and mix up the two episodes. So I apologize in advance to our listeners and to my co-hosts. But anyway, we've got another great episode to talk about. And as always, let me first ask all of you, what did you think? First reactions. Shelley, let's start with you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I caught the Tron Legacy reference right off the top. I mean, the whole Flynn thing was like, bam.
Good.
And I was really surprised when I talked to Lisa and some other people, and they didn't even catch it. So that's kind of my favorite thing, that the writers, producers linked up with the Tron Legacy movie.
Mm-hmm. We'll go into detail later. David, what did you think?
Yeah, I would agree this is one of the best episodes of the season, and I didn't really catch the Tron Legacy thing until later. I just remember thinking when I looked at the dad, it's like, you know, he kind of looks like Bridges when he did that mm-hmm. last Tron movie, mm-hmm. and I just dismissed it and then came back like, oh, they did that on purpose. But yeah, Henry hasn't really had a spot in this had mm-hmm. much to say so lately. So this is kind of a nice change, It proves to me again that there's every character is in the show for a reason.
I think so too. What about you, Lisa?
I think I liked, again, watching Regina, trying to figure out. I loved that it was Groundhog Day, mm-hmm, you know, and things mm-hmm. kept going, and she realized this isn't quite what I wanted. You know, mm-hmm. she's still frustrated and can't figure out what she wants. And then, of course, the end scene where she figures out maybe she can. And so I thought it was a great Regina episode with a lot of new stuff that the writers gave us with the...
Absolutely.
And I did not see the Tron stuff. Even when Shelley told me, I was like, what? I think I fell asleep in that movie.
Inge, what about you? Did you catch the Tron references?
I never saw any Tron movie, so I didn't catch the reference. But I did catch the Star Wars reference. So they were, in the beginning, talking about Luke's and the two lightsaber colors. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I now know who he is. And then I was like, and the other end of the episode, I was like, I knew it, I was right. And I was just dancing, yeah.
Wait, who did you think it was? Now I get confused.
Greg Mandel.
Yeah, because Greg Mandel.
Because Greg Mandel, when he showed up in Storybrooke, had this Star Wars ringtone on his phone.
Oh, wow. That is a good catch. I totally forgot about that one.
And that was an explicit Star Wars reference. And that was the only explicit Star Wars reference so far. And now there was another explicit Star Wars reference. So I was like, oh, he has to be Greg Mandel because of the explicit reference.
That one is even more hidden than the Tron reference. Pretty good. Good work.
He had that Return of the Jedi blanket, too.
I missed that. Deborah, who can't be joining us today, also wrote in her email, like, good luck talking about Return of the Jedi. I was like, wait, is that – I suppose it's just a lightsaber reference, right?
No, the movie came out in 1983, and this is set in 1983. Oh. So when they're camping in the woods, the very opening scene, he's sitting in a chair with that Star – it's a Return of the Jedi, like a fleece blanket tucked around him. Wow. And then they're playing with the little – I guess the keychains and talking about lightsabers. And I thought of you, Father. I was like, oh, there's Father. Can't get more Star Wars than that.
And you know what? I totally missed it. I must be really tired after these 10 days in the Vatican. But thanks for pointing me to it. I thought it was a great episode as well. I was wowed by the previous one, too, because it was so dramatic with the death of Cora. I didn't see that coming. I thought she would be in for the long run. But this one, in terms of complexity and themes, was even richer and in a way more satisfying, because we get a lot of answers and we get some more of the fundamental themes that have been part of Once Upon a Time ever since the first season. And I love it. I mean, it's classic storytelling where things get resolved and yet new events seem to predict at least another season for them to resolve themselves. Oh my goodness, poor Snow. I mean, this was definitely a Regina episode, but I felt most for Snow, especially because it goes back to her like early days in Storybrooke, and you see how uncomplicated she is because she has no memory and everything. And then towards the end, it's the total opposite, where she's like heartbroken, or she's tainted, and she's no longer the Snow that she used to be. And it was almost as if this episode is like the a bookend of everything we've seen so far in the development of her character, and it was in one episode. So great acting altogether for most of the actors, and I really thought that the boy Owen was a fierce competition to the young actor who plays Henry, because I thought the boy Owen was great. I don't know who that actor is, but felt very natural, and his line delivery was great. Anyway,
let's do a nice job.
Let's go through the various parts of the show. I have to admit, when we first get introduced to Owen and his father Kurt, there was something about Kurt Flynn that reminded me of something, and then the hair, and I was like, what? Who is this guy? I know this guy, but I didn't make the connection to Tron, mostly because Flynn is a Tron name, but Owen is not, and that's what got me confused. And
yeah, but Kevin is, and Kevin and Kurt had that same K sound, I did not realize that the writers and producers of Once Upon a Time wrote and produced the Tron Legacy movie. And once I realized that, I was just saying, oh my gosh, it's a parallel. It's a parallel. It's a parallel. Mm-hmm. If you go to IMDb and you look up the storyline, just the synopsis of Tron Legacy, Sam Flynn, the tech-savvy 27-year-old son of Kevin Flynn, looks into his father's disappearance and finds himself pulled to the same world of fierce programs and gladiator games where his father has been living for 20 years. What's that sound like?
Wow. Well, and the whole
I would pay to see him ride a light cycle through Storybrooke.
Didn't you think the chase at the end with the Bronco, the neon colored Bronco, and the sheriff's vehicle, wasn't that kind of a light cycle?
I think
chase,
so.
You know,
I think it was. I think it was a Storybrooke reference, like a real life version of the
With the light cycle, he cut him off.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was very well done.
Cora in the movie was played by Olivia Wilde, and Olivia Wilde was on the same TV show, hit TV show House.
Thank you. I was like, I know that actress, but who is it? And she reminds me of someone. And I'm still in the process of watching the last season of House MD, and she is a doctor on the team there too. Like, who is she? And I didn't have time to look it all up, but thank you so much. That clears up a lot of my confusion. The moment I got the reference to Tron was when they showed the 1983 advertisement for the computer company. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, now I know. That was great. Tron was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. I didn't care much for the new Tron or Tron Revolution, the 3D movie that came out. It was a huge disappointment because I just liked the first one so much. And I haven't seen the series yet, but I hope it's good. Because it's I love that idea of getting sucked into the computer. And in a way, Storybrooke is like the Once Upon a Time version of the computer world in which you get, you know, sucked in and you can't escape anymore.
Yeah, now, that was a great ingenious nod.
Yeah, it was very well done. And it didn't feel too convoluted, and it's clearly been planned for a long time, because of course we've seen this mysterious man, what's his name again?
Greg
Mendel for a while now, and we were constantly trying to guess who he is and where he comes from. And I guess this is just one of those other dimensions that the writers talked about, and so it wouldn't be exclusively fairy tales that would be part of the story. And do you guys think that we will ever get to go to the Tron world and open one of those doors in that circular room and enter into the computer, or would that be too much?
No, I think this is the Tron world, if you're talking about, you know, regular world versus magical world, because in the movie, in the Tron story, the father gets trapped inside the computer world. Well, this father is clearly trapped somewhere still,
right,
in Storybrooke, and mm-hmm. here's the outsider coming in to look. But as we remember in Tron Legacy, or even the Tron first movie, the outsider is coming in to control or to break or to destroy so that he can free his father, and he, basically to free it from the evil queen, the evil master computer programmer, MCP program. So something's going. I mean, he's definitely going to have an interesting twisty role in here.
I can't wait to see when they're going to throw frisbees around.
And I have to wonder too if the Tamara character is somehow connected with Owen. It's kind of one of my little things that keeps rattling in my head, that they're going to be connected somehow, because in Tron there were two guys and a girl. There were always the two buddies.
Yeah.
The Bruce Boxleitner character and the Jeff Bridges character. And later in Tron Legacy, I can't remember the details if one of them helped Sam or not, but the girl was still there. There was always the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of back and forth between the two boys. So I
have a theory about Tamara.
Okay, you want to talk about it right now?
Yeah, well, I think she's Ursula.
Ooh.
From Under the Sea. Because I did some looking around.
Mm-hmm.
In the Urban Dictionary, she said she's perfect goddess or unmatchable beauty. So that's what the urban definition of Tamara is. It means in Sanskrit spice. And in Hebrew, what we already said, date palm tree, which is a reference to oriental beauty. And in the Bible, Tamara is the daughter of King David and sister of Absalom. So what I think is, so she's royal or some ruler or related to some ruler. And we don't have a lot of rulers in realms left anymore because of the story we have already. And she also seems, that's a little spoiler, but there are some hints that she will at one point will come to Storybrooke. So then that
makes sense, because
tells me that she has some connection, not only maybe to the Tron movie, but also to Fairy Tale Land. And since we already talked about it in the last episode, we are going to visit Neverland. So my guess is that they will connect that to Under the Sea because of the pirate ship, water and everything.
But she doesn't come across as, I mean, we have hardly seen anything from her, but she doesn't really seem like evil to me. So how could she be Ursula?
Lisa had a theory that she was telling me. Lisa, are you still there?
Yeah.
Lisa had a great theory, I thought, about Tamara.
My thought is that she was either Tiger Lily or Tinkerbell. And my thought about Tinkerbell was because Tinkerbell always was jealous of Peter Pan and caused trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And cause trouble for Wendy. And if
yes.
you think that Emma would be Wendy in this situation and Vale is, I mean, Bale as Peter Pan, then I can see Tamara causing, you know, and just it's how often does one of these people meet up with a random person, you know, that's not a fairy tale? You know, I just don't. We think he's Peter Pan. We think he's got this long story. So it would make sense that he is connected long term to someone who's going to understand why he hasn't aged and, you know, all this garbage. So I don't know. So I think she's I'm going with Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
Now that would we should switch having, you know, not having blonde hair, you know, the what we think of as Tinkerbell.
David, what is your theory?
Oh yeah, I wasn't sure who from Neverland, but I was pretty sure she was from Neverland just because, like I said earlier, it doesn't seem like they have any characters here on accident. Mm-hmm. Through, you know, even though they, you know, even though they're the middle and, you know, even though everything has been landed in North America and Balefire seems to live in a city of New York City with 7 million other people, it can't be a coincidence that. So it's, she has to be from Neverland, I think. I'm starting to lean towards Tinkerbell myself.
We might discover in the next episode, but she's of course not in this episode, perhaps I've fallen asleep, but I didn't really see her. But there was a glimpse of a character that intrigued me, and it was just a 1 second glimpse, and perhaps it's just there by accident, or it might be something they're already introducing us to. And it's one when we see Regina waking up after the spell, which was a great moment because I at first I didn't realize that we were getting a flashback of that moment that basically the spell got into effect and Storybrooke came into existence. And Regina walks around and it's that same Groundhog Day walk that she keeps on doing later on. And there is this one moment where we see Geppetto repairing the thing above his store. And then she, towards the end of her walk, we see a boy and he's got a fruit in his hand. And I thought it was a peach. So I'm thinking, could that be what's the story with the boy with the peach?
James and the Peach.
James and the Peach. Because that is a Disney movie, after all. An animated Disney movie. It's done like a bit like the Tim Burton movies with animated puppets. But it's a kind of a forgotten Disney movie. It's not very popular. It has great songs. It's more like an animated musical. I can highly recommend it. If only for the music, it's fantastic. So I was wondering, is that there just as a background character, which seems a bit too, it seemed to be there a little bit too deliberately. But then again, there was nothing else that indicated that this was a character that we would see in the future. So it might have been just an extra. But
it could have been a place for if we go to season 3. I missed that entirely.
I don't know. Well, yeah, it just intrigued me. But perhaps our listeners know if I'm onto something or not. I loved, by the way, how all the actors played themselves in a younger version. I was very impressed because the way that we see Storybrooke was exactly the way it looked in the very first mm-hmm. episodes of the first season. And it made me very nostalgic. It's like, wow, that seems like such a long time ago that they were like that. And look at what happened since. And then for the actors to be able to go back to that place, I thought it was amazing.
Well, who else was excited or you're surprised when we saw Graham again?
Yes.
I mean, he walks up and you're like, whoa, what'd I miss?
Right.
And it was, I loved that. I loved getting introduced to Storybrooke all over again and seeing her walk through the town and kind of be like, well, of course, you know, you did see her open the wardrobe and you're like, really? Yeah, you get the curse, you go to the, and that's what you, I mean, really? It's all gray. Did you notice that? All her clothes were like gray and black.
Oh. And she's had the same wardrobe since 1983.
Mm-hmm.
So what was in style at the, I mean, I guess she just had the classic selection, but
yeah,
every
that wasn't
single
in style
person,
in 83.
They have the exact same wardrobe for 28 years.
Hey, it's timeless. The town is timeless.
But the curse managed to get people from one world to the next. I'm not sure if the curse factored in for fashion taste.
There you go.
Too much.
Well, And did you notice, what was it that she wasn't sure how to use something or do? It was just fascinating kind of watching her get used to this world. And then yes. You realized it was Groundhog Day.
Yes.
And every morning she woke up again and you were like, that's going to get old really fast.
Brilliantly done. Really, really well done. Because we never really got a glimpse of Storybrooke before the curse was broken, or before Regina, I should say, entered the city and time started to move forward again. And so basically, it was like an eternal, it was Groundhog Day, which I thought was brilliant. I never thought about it. It's like, how was Storybrooke before the clock started ticking again? I just never gave it thought, but Groundhog Day makes total sense. And then the only person who is changing, or that we see changing, is Regina herself, because nothing really changes in Storybrooke except for her. She's getting more and more disillusioned and unhappy because ultimately, you know, it's a town without freedom, without free people, and they're all puppets and marionettes in a way.
And didn't you love it that they liked her because they had to or something?
Yes.
And she was like,
yes.
But you're like, I want them to mm-hmm. fear me. And, you know, I just love that. It's like, even again, you know, she used magic. She got what she, quote, wanted, mm-hmm. but it's not what she wanted.
And I think it's very deep because this is truly about the value of freedom and people having a free choice. And yes, you can have a very organized society if no one is free, let's say in a totalitarian state. But is that true? Does that really it brings order, but does it really make you happy? And doesn't happiness come from undeserved love or from people choosing you and needing you instead of, you know, being pre-programmed to be kind to you?
You know, the other thing that they haven't really mentioned, and it's been a sticking point for me, is Henry. Henry being brought in at some point later, not yet, obviously, mm-hmm. but being, and it took them years and years and years to get Henry, if you think about it, because Emma didn't have him until she was 19, so 19 years it took to get Henry in there. Everything would have been the same every day.
Yes.
So he would have been the only thing changing. He mm-hmm. would have been the only one aging, the only one growing. Every year his friends would be the same age they were last year, but he'd be aging. So how would that have played out for him as a child?
True.
Growing?
Well,
yeah,
if he
did he notice? I mean, nobody else knew, but if he was a baby and then grew, I don't know how that works. Maybe they'll
morning,
figure it out.
But it teaches the same class the same thing every morning. And so how did Henry River, so the only person Henry would have ever interacted with is Regina. So when Emma comes on the scene and they say he's lonely, he's a very lonely boy, if every morning they wake up and they don't have a memory of the day
True.
Before, they just have, or maybe they did, but just the same thing.
Perhaps that's why at one point Henry is basically told the truth and gets that fairy tale book and starts to put the pieces of the puzzle together and realizes where he is and what's going on. Did we ever get an explanation on how he got the fairy tale book and who gave
Mary
it to him?
Mary Margaret.
Yeah.
So perhaps
we
he
don't
discovered
know why she has it.
Yeah, perhaps he discovered it by himself.
Maybe August brought it.
Who knows?
Oh, it's true. He could have
he
come
could
to
have
town.
Brought it.
I wonder if we'll ever get to see that backstory, or whether it will just be conveyed to us it'll just be narrated, because they can't obviously go back in time and show him as a younger version of himself. And there was a very slight moment when I thought, is Owen supposed to be Henry when he was young? And I was like, no, it looks way too different. And you can't have two kids, you know, one kid playing a younger version of the other kid. I mean, that would be too complicated.
I got the impression that Owen was about the same age. He might have been 8 or 9 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But watching Regina get so upset about trying to keep him there, Owen was his name, right? Trying to keep him there and wanting to, you want to come live with me? You want to know this is, and I was thinking back to Hansel and Gretel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's done this before. She,
yes.
Her life is missing something and
yes.
She wants to fill it.
It's that hole in her heart.
Right, and you saw her with him, and then I thought, that's where the desire and the love for Henry. You know, she wants something that's her,
yes,
someone
yes.
that will love her. And
She thinks she has everything, and then she realizes she hasn't. There's this hole in her heart, and the only people that can truly fill that hole are people that are truly free and choose to be with her. And that's the whole the underlying conflict that everybody has with magic. It's like you can use magic as a tool to and in a way, this is even part of the criticism of a lot of Christians on, like, let's say the use of magic or you know, the occult attempts to get a grip on the world that surrounds you by eliminating freedom. And freedom being so essential to true love, if you try to manipulate people, then you get further away from love. That is the underlying criticism that in Christianity of occultism, because it's an attempt to control what you should not want to. You shouldn't want to control it, because if you destroy people's freedom, then what good is it? If they love you, because it's not true love. And I think that is Regina's internal struggle, where she is in her essence just a child who longs to be loved by her mom and never got that love, and then she is trying to fill it with or try to compensate for that by trying to control people and make them love her, and of course that is doomed to fail.
Yeah, I also wonder with this whole Groundhog Day and this the same day happening over and over and over again, that whose curse is worse? The people whose memory is eliminated when they fall asleep and go through the same day over again without realizing it, of her being the only person who does realize that
yes,
everything is repeating, and she's not able to stop it.
It's the price that she pays, and every time you use magic, it has consequences that you might not foresee, and you think that you're better off, and then bit by bit she starts to realize that she didn't really get what she wants.
Yeah, she says, "I won, but did she really?"
Yes, and I thought it was very well acted again. That same walk, and then you see her getting grumpier and grumpier and less and less satisfied. It was brilliant.
It's also not. I thought it was the same clip being repeated, but I see, for example, Ruby wearing different clothes and people wearing different clothes. So it's not entirely the same, but
no,
the behavior is kind of programmed.
Yes, nothing ever changes. It's a bit like the movie Pleasantville, where everybody seems to be stuck, and it's this gray, this black and white world, and you know, it's perfect, and yet it is totally the opposite of perfect, because it's, you know, nothing ever happens. No one is really free. And then bit by bit, it's a brilliant story. If you've never seen the movie, I can highly recommend it. Pleasantville. It's kind of overlooked as a children's movie, but it is, again, a very nice fairy tale. And even visually, it's spectacular, because it shows first that village in black and white. And then bit by bit, when freedom is introduced, color starts to appear. It's very, very well done. But anyway, there are lots of similarities to that movie and to the movie Groundhog Day in this episode, without it being like a total copy of it. And of course, Kurt and his boy Owen are the only people that are truly free, because they, well, accidentally get caught in the confines of the curse. And that is why Regina at first is so afraid of them. And she is terrified. You know, she's like, I don't like surprises, which is a way to say, I don't like freedom. I want everything to be programmed. And then she starts to discover, and again, brilliant writing, that it's ultimately the only thing that is truly interesting to her and that is compelling to her is people that are free. And then she makes the mistake of trying to want to control that. And the moment you lock it up, it's like that bird that Snow White has in her hands when she teaches the class. You know, it's like you're building a home, you're not building a cage. And that is what Regina doesn't understand. It's like the moment you try to capture the bird and lock it in, the bird will die, basically. It will never fly. Yeah, it's beautiful. Let's see. I want to go to a sound clip, but Inge, you did the preparation for the show. It's a sound clip that's called "Why Don't You Give Up This Obsession with Vengeance?" What does it refer to? Which scene is this?
That's the first scene in present day Storybrooke, where Regina is mourning her mother. So she puts a rose on the casket, and then Gold enters, and right. That's when the scene starts.
Okay, let's listen.
Why don't you just give up this obsession with vengeance? You know, it can never make you happy.
Yes, it will.
You had a whole curse worth of vengeance. And what did it get you? A gaping hole in your heart.
That was your curse.
Which you cast. Still haven't learned your lesson, have you?
What lesson?
The same one your mother learned a long time ago. You can't have everything. She wanted power. Ripped out her own heart to get it. You want vengeance? Henry's a price you'll pay. Time to cut your losses.
Never. I will have my son, and I will have my vengeance. I will find a way to have everything.
You never learn from your mistakes. That seems to be another character problem with Regina, and something that returns at the end of the episode. You know, I never learn. That's my problem. I never learn from my mistakes.
So she knows it herself.
Uh-huh. But she's unable to. I guess it's the only solution that she sees. It's just turn back to evil time and again. And even though she's seen that it's ultimately destroying everything, and it won't satisfy her. But it seems that every time she tries to be vulnerable and tries the other route, she gets disappointed.
Yeah, but isn't that the point of making yourself vulnerable? Yes, you can get disappointed, but you also can get the other way around. You can also get a lot of love and happiness. So it's kind of a risk you take in order to know true happiness.
I think what the episode makes clear is that if there is evil in this world, it is because people deliberately refuse to love. They rip out their hearts. It's always the result of a choice, and not just. And that's kind of an interesting discussion towards the end of the episode, where, you know, is it just magic that is corrupting everyone, or is it the choices? And I'm of course more
choices.
I think it's choices.
Definitely choices.
It's a choice to use magic, so it all comes back to their choices.
Yes.
Look, people can apply this even into their real lives. If they have something and then they want something else, and which price do they pay to choose? If you make a choice, you make a change. Sometimes you don't realize what it will cost you until you've done it.
And it's interesting to see that Henry, being a boy, is still a child. He wants to solve it the easy way, just by let's get rid of this magic, you know.
Yeah, just blow it up.
I was thinking it's a very very there's an analogy with the whole discussion about weapons in the United States, and I don't want to get into the political part of that, but it's the kind of same thing. It's like, well, as long as we take away the weapons, then, you know, nobody will do evil anymore. And it's like, yeah, but the people that are the real crazy people that really want to do evil, they'll use whatever they can find to inflict evil, you know. I guess it's more nuanced than that, but it's an analogous discussion here in Storybrooke. The only thing that struck me about this scene, which I thought was a bit weird, was that Regina has gone through that shock of you know, having a mother for 5 seconds, with Cora getting her heart back and then losing her mother. And then she knows in this episode that it's actually, yes, Snow was the perpetrator, but at the same time, Rumpel is behind it. Rumpel tricked Snow into doing this. And yet, she still wants to take vengeance on Snow White and not on Rumpelstiltskin. Did that surprise you? Or
no, because also when she later on goes into Snow's apartment, she sees Rumpel protecting her. Why doesn't she go after Rumpel? Because she can't beat Rumpel. So what do bullies do? If you cannot beat the person you hate or you really want to beat, you seek another victim that you can beat. So because Snow cannot protect herself with magic, she goes after Snow because she can't get Rumpel.
And I don't think that. I think you're a little bit incorrect in saying Rumpel tricked Mary Margaret Snow into doing this. I don't think he tricked her at all. I think he laid out very clearly to her, here are your choices, here are your options, and here's why I think you should do my choice, and here's where our interests are aligned. And Snow made that choice freely. I don't think she was tricked into it. I think she felt desperate, the same way that we've seen other characters do desperate things. What was it? Desperate times call for desperate measures. That's what Mr. Gold told Regina in the tomb. And so here again, he's telling her, here's your choice to Regina. Cut your losses, you know, forget the vengeance and take Henry, take the love that you've got open to you as an opportunity. And she's still like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also very immature in some way. It's like small children who are angry, they do behave like that. Adults don't necessarily do that. So it's also the same thing when she sees Owen and she wants to keep him. Like when I was little.
Keep a puppy dog.
Yeah, when I was little, yeah. I found a little duckling and I took it home because I wanted to keep it. And my mom told me to bring it back. And I was very, very upset about it. But it's almost the same kind of behavior that Regina.
Well, she never really got to grow up, if you think about it. I mean, she never really had a chance to grow up like normal people. So she keeps making the same mistakes over and over. And she keeps trying to wipe away the consequences like a little kid would. Just like she isn't so much more sad that she did something wrong. It seems like she's sad that she gets caught.
Yeah.
She very rarely made her own choices growing up. Her mother controlled her.
Yes.
Without love being involved. So she grew up in that same confined utopia, that same, well, we're going to make everything look as though it's pretty and appears. But she was always very controlled.
I think it's true. She just has never gotten the time to learn this. And that there was this brief moment of conversion where, you know, Henry tried to help her, but it was too brief. And there are so many established routines almost in her behavior that it's very easy to fall back. It's like we've discussed this many times before. It's like a drug addict that can have a moment of, you know, I'm gonna get better, but then the habits are so strong, and it's so easy to just use power instead of becoming vulnerable. So.
And I'm still a little miffed with the writers for how they're writing Henry in his response to Regina. This woman raised him for 10 years. She did love him. And for whatever reason, he didn't feel that same love. Regardless, I mean, here's this Emma, this woman that he knows is his mom. And he's met her now for, what, all of a year and a half. And he feels much more drawn to her, much more embracing to her. And, oh, gee, you know, Regina, thanks for saving my mom and my grandmother, but on you, and I'm going to go over here with them now. That one moment in that episode just still gnaws at me that it was the wrong thing. But it had to, I suppose, for the plot. Because if he had turned and embraced Regina and brought her into the family, who said, I'm glad, you know, you saved them, you saved her. Mm-hmm. Come with us now, be part of our love, be part of our family. That there wouldn't be any story for Regina to be back.
Right, the hole would be filled and it would be over, basically.
But
right.
They've been very consistent
with Henry.
That's what a child would
have done.
But they've been very consistent with Henry. From day one, remember, in the pilot, he's telling her, but you're the evil queen. I mean, he looks at his mother and says, you're the evil queen. Mm-hmm. So he's been very consistent about, for some reason, you know, his little 10-year-old brain is mom's evil queen, and I don't really like her all that much. And this other mom is my biological mom is out there, and she's good, and she's, you know, from true love, and she's going to save me. I mean, it's
black and white. That's how kids think.
Maybe he should not have stopped those sessions with Dr. Hopper.
Are you worried about your own kids, Shelley? Come on, I can see it there.
Well, Regina doesn't.
Hey, this show's teaching me a whole bunch of parenting lessons. Or how
very
not
good,
to parent
very good.
Or something like that.
I'm still going to my kids. I'm like, see, mom's not quite that bad. Look.
Well, speaking of mothers there, Cora, when she stood over Ava's cold, dead body, and she said, I will not rest until your daughter has a black heart. And here at the end, Regina thinks she's found the answer to having everything, which is, I don't have to kill you. I don't have to wreak vengeance upon you. You've already done it to yourself. You've darkened your heart. See that little spot? And I thought, oh my gosh. So, and I thought this when she killed Cora. Did Cora win? Did Cora win what she, did she achieve what she set out to do? Did she darken Mary Margaret's heart? Is there no redemption for Snow? How is she going to wipe that spot? Now, how can she? She's never going to be the Snow white pure heart again.
Well, that remains to be seen. That remains to be seen. Are there happy endings? That's the main question here. And if you have made a mistake, can you return? The show so far has been trying to teach us that ultimately it all depends on your choices. And yes, evil will leave scars, but there is also redemption possible if you want it. And this, the some of the characters in Storybrooke in this episode seem to go for the more, let's say, Calvinist determinist approach of, you know, once evil, you'll just get worse. But there is a very clear Catholic slant to most of these fairy tales and to this series as well. So I think, you know, this is probably going to be a longer story thread, and I think it might be very interesting to see if Snow will turn darker. And this might be actually another moment where she and Prince Charming are going to be separated, this time perhaps not by distance, but, you know, just emotionally or whatever, and they will have to somehow find each other again.
Yeah, he'll be fighting for her, and she'll be distant.
Oh, yeah. I'm rooting for her to somehow get, you know, cleansed and become white as snow, as the psalm, what is it, says.
Well, I love that she showed up on the doorstep in a self-sacrifice. I called that last week, and I said the only thing I can – she's going to show up on that doorstep and say, kill me. And so as soon as the doorbell rang and she opened the door, I was like, I win. There we go.
Wow.
Yeah, but
good call.
We had lots of feedback because we were discussing this also last week,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about does Regina needs to forgive Snow for what she did, and a number of mm-hmm. listeners pointed to the fact that there are two things: the guilt and the fact that she's in bed almost depressed is mm-hmm. not so much that she killed Cora, but the fact that she used dark magic to do it.
Mm.
So, and that's also one of the audio feedback says also, TJ.
Which one is that, TJ? Let me play that one now. Let's listen.
Hey, everybody, this is TJ, and I'm calling for the secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN. You know, guys, I've got to say, I don't really think that what Mary Margaret has done in the last couple of episodes is all that wrong. I mean, I understand giving somebody chances to repent and all that, but at the same time, at what point is it legitimate to say, you know, I'm not going to take that chance that this is the one time that you're actually going to repent and see the error of your ways? Sorry, not when the stakes are the lives of my child and grandchild. At some point, you know, mercy to the wolf really is cruelty to the sheep. And if Mary Margaret was coming from a place where she just wanted to protect her child and her grandchild and her town and her people, well, I don't really see what was wrong with that. And honestly, I kind of have a problem with some of the morality of the last couple of episodes. To tell you the truth, is anything ever anyone's fault in this? Regina is bad, but okay, she was only bad because Cora was bad. And Cora was bad, but she was only bad because she had bad circumstances. And Rumple is bad, but he's only bad because someone put upon him. Well, at what point are these things really your own responsibility? It's just something to think about, and if you wanted to respond to that, I'd be interested to hear what you've got to say. All right, bye.
All right, TJ, thank you so much for that feedback. That is a great discussion, and I'd love to respond to that, to a few points if I can. First of all, you know, is it anyone's fault what is happening? I think what the writers are trying to show us is that evil is not something that just happens. It always has a genesis. Something happens in the past. People get hurt, and it's from hurt, from anger, from pain that they act evil. However, the other thing that this story in this series tries to make clear time and again is that ultimately it is still a free decision to act upon those feelings of hurt. And I think that's the big distinction. So one thing is being damaged, being hurt. Another thing is to use that to, let's say, as an excuse to do evil, it doesn't really absolve someone. It explains the context. But it's the same thing as if when I hear confessions as a priest, people sometimes give me the backstory. You know, this is a situation. I regret having done this and this and that. But you have to understand that. And then they tell me kind of the context. Now, the context is very important for me to be able to give good advice and to place things in perspective. At the same time, it does not make what was objectively wrong right. It just, they're attenuating circumstances, but it doesn't turn something that is evil in itself to something that is morally good. So that's one remark that I want to make here. The second thing is, what was that second thing? I just lost it. Was it about Snow White? That she, so I do think that there was certainly a moment where she made the wrong decision, and it was, if you want to protect your child, which is kind of what we expect heroes to do, then you can never use evil to accomplish that. And when you say, well, you know, sometimes you have to kill the wolf to protect the sheep, in this case, we're not talking animals that are pre-programmed to eat sheep. We're talking free human beings. And so you can never totally exclude the possibility of someone converting. And so killing someone just in order to prevent worse evil, you also kill the possibility for that person to convert and to change. And so I don't think that is a good logic to use in ethics. You can never accomplish something good by committing something extremely evil. I guess in this case, we see the moment where the moment of the fall of Snow White is when she whispers that curse, and she's cursing literally Cora. It's like a death sentence. And I think that's the moment where she's actually not entirely Snow White anymore. And then, of course, the question is, what can that be forgiven? Is that irreversible? Is it going to be the first step towards more evil? Which sometimes is the case, you know. Big evil always starts small. It's like the murderers start by stealing cookies. You know, don't tell your kids because you don't want to freak them out. But it is true that if you like and that, I think it's one of the things in the gospel that is returning time and again. Is let your yes be yes and your no be no. But don't fall for the small, you know, I can get away with this. So the little white lies, because they might grow and develop and turn into big lies and ultimately in worse than that. So it's morality is always in a way black and white. It's always all or nothing, which can't be just very moral, but not entirely. There's little things that are not entirely moral because, you know, either I can get away with it or it's for my own good or for the good of the people around me. No, evil is evil and good is good. And you can't obtain good by doing evil. That is, I think, the lesson that Regina needs to learn. That you cannot attain love by basically robbing people from their free will.
Yeah, can we make a distinction between just the murder? So that Snow, so some listeners wrote in calling it self-defense of defense of others. So, and then they don't see Snow guilty of murder, but they say, the big problem is that she uses dark magic to do that.
She knows
and,
very
and
well.
And the moment she uses dark magic, she gives evil a foothold in her soul, someone writes.
Well, the moment you curse someone, it's basically saying, I want you to die. And, of course, it's not the same as literally sticking a knife in someone's heart, but it gets very close. I mean, it's the intention is there, so the evil has already been committed in a way.
In a way, she sacrificed herself for her family and her town by doing this. But
yeah.
Now she has to live with the consequences
of
that.
Yeah. And is that a good sacrifice to make?
And living with the consequences proves to be more difficult than she thought.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it always does.
Mm-hmm. You think you can do something, and then you have to live with it. And I did love seeing her struggle with that.
Yes.
But at one point she asked Rumpel, how do you live with it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that was a good question.
Yeah, and then Rumpel says, you just say you did a good thing. And if you repeat it often enough, then you may start to believe it.
Yeah.
That was an amazing dialogue. And it's what a lot of people do. They keep just convincing themselves that, it wasn't that bad. Oh, it was actually good what I did. And who cares, you know?
But the way he delivered that line led me to believe that Mr. Gold does have remorse. Because he says, you tell yourself totally. You did the right thing, you say it often enough. One day, you might actually believe it.
He couldn't meet her eyes when he was saying it.
Yeah.
He had to look off in the distance.
And to see him feel guilt was very, because again, there's show. I know in the beginning I just wanted the evil people to be evil and the good people to be good, but they keep conflicting me.
Yes.
That's what makes a great story, though. That's interesting.
I mean, wasn't it amazing to hear Rumpel say, I have a lot of love. there is a lot of love in me, but he's been hurt as well. And he's been, betrayed or abandoned by Korra. And
he lived many decades without it, having to put up that wall and not let anybody in.
Well, and I absolutely loved his trying to connect with Regina over the death of her mother, that I loved her too. Again, you're seeing that vulnerable side of him, and it gives you hope for him reconciling with Belle.
Yeah.
He's seeing this, or reconciling with Bay for that matter,
mm-hmm.
That he's recognizing that he has pushed many people away and what his quest for power has done to his life.
I also really, really like that whole thing about the turnovers.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? It's like, wow, that is so symbolic. I mean, we've seen the turnover before.
I'm not a good cook.
Irony.
Unless it involves apples. And I laughed out loud when she said that.
She invited them for dinner, was anyone thinking she was going to serve turnovers for dessert to the dad? I mean, were you like, oh, no.
But it was lasagna. Apparently, that's the only meal she eats is lasagna.
Well, yeah, because she's made that before
for the party.
Was it?
For the party, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a wicked lasagna. Hey, but
no, that's what they'll do. They'll come out with a cookbook, a Once Upon a Time cookbook
that'd
with
be
turnovers,
great.
Lasagna. And what does Granny make? What have we seen
she made
there?
Made apple pancakes. She served apple pancakes.
Yes, true.
Apple pancakes.
And she eats it herself, too, at the first time she goes to Granny's. She eats pancakes. Mm. What I loved about that whole scene is that it there is a great contrast there between this turnover, which becomes the symbolic dessert for Regina wanting to turn over her life, to begin again, to start anew. She has come to the conclusion that she... Yes, it's great to have a good life, but it's terrible if you have no one to share it with. If you're surrounded by puppets, basically. And then just before that, there's discussion about the blood feud or the blood dispute, which can only be solved by shedding more blood. That's basically what Rumpel says. And Henry is outraged. Like, you guys used to be heroes. What happened to you? And it's this disappointment of a child that discovers that adults are not perfect, and that even his mom is lying to him. It's like this disenchantment of your childhood, where you discover that the world isn't good.
Henry is growing up.
Oh yeah, it's hard for this boy. I feel for him. But again, he has that very good intuition that it's not true. That there is another, there has to be another way to resolve a blood dispute, and it's not just by adding more violence to the mix. There has to be something like self-sacrifice. It's not mentioned here, but we've seen that is the solution to break spells. It's true love. It's giving your life for the ones you love, and that is it's so stupid for it that Regina still doesn't get it, and is constantly. Like, she wants to start a new life, and yet she robs herself of the only tool that she has to get there, and that is by, letting go. And there's this beautiful scene where she lets Owen go, and she's at the frontier of Storybrooke, and is the child. I thought it was one of the most powerful scenes in this entire episode, where the father is captured, Kurt, and then the boy is like, why? And she's like, I just want it to be happy. I want you to be happy. And he's like, but not like this. And then she steps back and you see both her hands, like she's letting go. She's like, I don't want to take the life of this child. That's basically, I think, what it expresses. And that's when there's this barrier between the two, and the town becomes invisible, and it's just so rich in symbolism what happens there. And this boy is left all alone with this hole in his heart, trying to and he already had the hole in his heart of losing his mother, which is mentioned at the beginning of the episode. Now he's lost his father. I mean, my goodness, what a tragic childhood. This Greg Mendel, I'm very curious to see where it's going to take this man, because he's just walking around as a Sherlock Holmes, taking pictures and making little movie clips to put on YouTube of whatever he sees. But ultimately what drives him is this hole in his heart, which can be very dangerous, because it can also be something that might turn him to evil. You know, could he be, I don't know, the Wizard of Oz, who is going to try to take control because he wants his father back? Or I don't know.
I think that they started.
Who does take control?
I was wondering if he was just like driving around Maine this whole time, or did he just wait until it popped up on the map and then he drove there?
Yeah, that's weird. I think he's driving around Maine the whole time. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think he tried to find it back. He came driving in with high speed and probably not seeing that there were people on the street. At the other side of the town line.
Like Back to the Future. If I drive up to 88 miles an hour.
Yeah, I go through the invisible barrier. Oh, interesting.
What I was going to point out was that it was a really nice parallel, the way the directors, producers, the way they cut that scene, having her let Owen go, you want to stay here, not like this. And then to cut almost immediately to Henry.
Yeah, we have a clip.
Henry saying, oh, you do? Okay, I'll.
Okay. Let me play this. It's number 4, right?
No, yeah, that's the.
Or the one at the well. I can't lose you, Henry. Let me play that one first.
I can't lose you, Henry.
I can't lose you, Henry. You mean too much to me.
Then don't cast the curse. Don't kill Mary Margaret.
Henry, she has to pay.
The curse. It won't make me love you for real. It'll be fake.
But it will be something. I know it's hard for you to understand right now, but you'll see. We can be happy. We can have everything.
Not like this. Stop!
Henry, get out of the way!
Not until someone helps me destroy magic!
There's no way to get rid of it. You can't just blow it up. Magic isn't the problem, kid. It's her.
It's not just her. It's everyone. Look what magic did to Mary Margaret. Look at what it did to you. It's ruining everything. It makes good people do terrible things.
And bad people.
I miss that parallel. Indeed, it's true. It's the same thing, you know, not like this. And then we get Owen escaping from Storybrooke. Let's listen to that one.
You may have this whole town wrapped around your finger. Not my son. Can't force him to stay with you.
Dad!
Don't stop! Run! Run!
Owen, it's okay. I'm not going to hurt you.
Why are you doing this?
I just want you to stay with me. You said you liked it here. You want to stay here, don't you?
Like this.
So could it be that Greg is going to be the one that is going to somehow redeem Regina? Because there seemed to be chemistry between the two and they understand each other. At the same time, Regina has done this to him. So will he go? He's a kind of a gray character, can go both ways. He can be the one who will save Regina and he can be the one that might want to destroy her.
What if the young boy who's going to be Gold's undoing isn't Henry?
Oh, and might be Owen?
The other one. Hmm.
And the undoing might not be killing her, but saving her?
Hmm. I could be undoing the curse, undoing all of it.
Ooh, I like that. Yes.
Have we had a scene with Regina and Greg Mandel in it together?
Yes.
We have, haven't
yes.
we?
Yes. Well, because...
the phone call, did they meet?
Yeah, they meet. They met at the end, I think, or not?
No, not in this episode. So, previous, when he was in the hospital. Because now I need to go back and look, because once we saw that has he... he hasn't confronted her. Has he even talked? The what's built up inside of him for 28 years. And has he's in the town with her. I kept waiting for that moment at the confrontation. And then I had to... Has he talked to her?
Because she looks exactly the same, and he has changed. So
yeah, what I would wonder is because Greg obviously would recognize Regina, but would Regina recognize Greg?
No,
as
I don't think
boy?
So.
No, we didn't.
No, but he knows who she is. So my thought is, I have to go back and look. Did they have a talk? Did she come see him in the hospital and watch his face? Did the writers give us some indication there? But I'm thinking that they've not. Talk,
perhaps that's still to come. That might still.
It would have been in the name of the brother, the Frankenstein episode.
I don't know. I'll have to go back and watch it.
I also wondered where they would have this. How should I say that? Tucked away his father, because if he didn't leave Storybrooke, he needs to be somewhere, and I need to see if I can look at the season. Finale for last year, isn't he maybe the janitor in that mental ward?
I don't remember.
I was thinking he's probably in the he's with Nurse Ratched. Was my guess.
Yeah, my guess is he's locked up where Belle was.
Yeah.
Down in the,
yeah.
I think the janitor was like a big. The janitor looked like the big Indian from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, if I remember right.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So perhaps he's just stuck in inside Regina's computer from 1983. Now, that would be dramatic. Stuck in a 64K loop. stored on a 3 megabyte hard drive. Inside Windows.
That's one of the big questions I have. Where is this Owen's father? Where did he go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
He's in that vault. That mirrored room she was in where she was hiding from her mom? Maybe there's like a whole... dungeon down there.
He's stuck in DOS. Right. Let's listen to. Speaking of dark places, let's listen to the last sound clip about Snow's dark spot in the heart, her own personal DOS black screen inside whatever.
I don't need to destroy you. You're doing it to yourself. And along the way. You'll bring down that perfect little family you fought so hard to reunite. And then Henry will be mine.
Please just kill me.
I can have everything. Now get off my porch.
I have to say, I still can't get used to that, the sound effects of the open heart surgery that we see time and again. It's like,
I noticed it listening now, and I didn't notice it when I watched it.
Some ribs are getting destroyed every time they do that. Anyway, but it's wow, what an ending here. And so ominous for Snow.
The two of them together, it just really, the actresses, they just can play off each other emotion. And they just do such a great job.
Amazing. And then it's of course, it's so tragic because it's like evil doing this to the both of them. And it's making them so unhappy, whereas their only wish is to have happy endings. And then it's ultimately also what Regina strives for. Her motivation is also, she is not perceiving what would be truly good. But she is still acting out of some kind of attempt to restore goodness to at least her universe. So, wow. It's such a rich show. It's so amazing. We've got one last piece of feedback that I want to play, and then we're going to wrap it up. This is from Taylor, and this is feedback about Manhattan. Is that one of the previous episodes, or Inge?
Yeah, that's the episode where they went to... where Neil and where they discovered that Neil was bae.
Okay, well, let's listen to that. There's a bit of background
this
noise.
This is your faithful friend, Taylor Massey, calling you for the secrets of Once Upon a Time. That last episode had me on my floor. I was so shocked with everything. From the fact that Neil was Balefire, which I have to admit with Deborah, I think it was. I agree with you. I got bragging rights with my mom on that. Two, the information about the dagger. How in the world are they going to find it now without Hook? Interesting. Now, here's some things I want to know. If August knew Neil's Balefire, how did he know? And if Rumpel was that careless to leave the information where Regina or Cora could have gotten it, why did he do it? So, anyway, it was great. But I have to agree with Rumpel's decision on injuring himself before the Ogre Wars, when the seer told him about Balefire. I can't blame him, and yet everyone said he was a coward. Honestly, that's more of a hero sentence to me. But that's just my opinion. What do you all think? So, anyway, if you think it was weird for me watching it, I bet it was just as weird for you. And what I really felt bad for Rumpel was he comes home and he's hurt from using that sledgehammer or whatever. And Mila, his wife, just says, "You're a coward, flat out." That's harsh. But my favorite part, I have to admit, besides that, was when Charming and Snow were talking about how Rumpel is the other grandfather. And Charming's like, "Well, I thought I was his grandfather." And then Snow goes, "Well, you got more than one." Then the funny part Charming says was, "Good thing they don't have Thanksgiving in our land. That would suck." I'm sorry, but that's what he said. But I agree. Yes, it would. So that was hilarious. Anyway, hope to hear more from you guys. Thanks a lot.
Well, we definitely are going to talk more about all this stuff. It's long feedback, and unfortunately, we ran out of time to get rid of the little noise in the background. But thank you so much for sending that in, Taylor. And any reactions to this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. How did August know that Neil was Balefire? And I think that the only explanation I have that they both were in Neverland. That's the only reason I can
could
think
be.
Of.
Yeah. Do you think August will come back to the story? I mean, he's been out of...
Yes. They've been teasing it. He's okay. A teaser.
Are we yeah. venturing there? Because there was a preview at the end of the
okay, well, let's go. Let's go into spoiler territory. I'll play the sound of the sneak peek. I haven't seen the video itself, so we're just going to play the audio. And then we'll just have to wrap it up real quickly. So here's the sound of the it's a preview. Is this going to be aired this Sunday, or do we get a
tomorrow.
Break for tomorrow? Okay, we're recording this on Saturday, and then is there a break for Easter or?
I don't know.
I haven't looked it up.
Shoot us well.
We'll see. Anyway, here's the sound.
This is a town where magic exists. Only next Sunday.
My fiance, she's on her way here.
Does she know who you really are?
The real world is closing in to steal their secret.
Long time.
Are you trying to take the magic from Storybrooke?
And their only hope is the most unlikely of heroes.
Anyone in here?
Just me.
Once Upon a Time, all new, next Sunday, 8, 7 Central on ABC.
Wow, that voice is just low.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we're running.
I thought it was Lurch or something like that.
We're running out of time, so we can't discuss what we saw in this short clip. But, you know, it's very simple. If you want to hear our thoughts, then you just have to chime in next week for another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Now, this is an important week for most of us because we're Catholics, and so it's the Holy Week. So we'll have to see if we can find a moment to record a show. We'll do our best. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Keep sending us your feedback. Go to onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and that's where you can find a place where you can leave your comments, and you can find our contact information. See you soon on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Thanks for listening. and godless.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.